Welcome back, everyone, to the Spooky Soup Podcast. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Tessa.
So, today, I have the historical story.
And I have the Reddit stories. I have two Reddit stories.
Right on. Righteous. Sweet. Okay, don't have any announcements besides just let you guys know that if there are any images associated with our stories, we will post those on our Instagram so you can check those out there. If you would like to send us a story to be read on the podcast, you are more than welcome to do so. They can be completely fake. They can be true, but as long as they're spooky, we will read them. You can email those to us at spookysuitpodcast801@gmail.com or DM them to us on our Instagram, spookysuitpodcast. Okay, I think I'm good. So I'll hand it over to you, unless you have anything before we start.
Nothing at the moment.
Waiting for Spirit Halloween to get their good stuff out.
I did see a sign. So one is opening close to the house. I cannot wait.
Heck yeah.
I saw it and I was like, my seasonal depression is cured.
Yes. Okay, right on. All right, I'll hand it over to you.
All right, so this first story comes to you from r/backwoodscreepy by Fred Sticks. Now, if you know anything about me, I love anything that has to do with scary forest stories or backwoods creepy anything. So this is right up my alley. And Fred Sticks says, attacked by mythical creatures from the Aboriginal Dreamtime stories while fishing in outback Australia. Longtime lurker, first time poster. I found the courage to post this after reading the numerous sightings of North American Indian mythical creatures, specifically the short people that seem to go by many names across the tribal regions of America. This exact type of creature has been sighted and discussed among Aboriginal people in Australia for thousands of years. In the southwest region, they're known as the Wiradjuri. I'm so sorry, I probably butchered that. Or hairy bushman. Standing a few feet tall, they possessed insane strength and speed. Prior to colonization, there were stories of their friendship / alliance with the Aboriginal people, but also there were stories of conflict and people or even children being taken by them. There were specific rules Aboriginal adults told their children, such as avoiding water bodies at night and in the evening, and no matter what, never ever whistle in the dark. It invites the bushman, and it only spells trouble. Well, in 1998, I knew none of this because I'm not Aboriginal, and at the age of 10, when this all happened, I had never even met an Aboriginal person or been taught anything about Aboriginal culture in school. It was the 90s, and Australia had an uncomfortable relationship with this history. Every school holiday, I used to leave the city and visit my aunt in the picturesque southwest countryside. I needed no encouragement in going because I loved the outdoors and had free rein to run amok on the dirt bike and go fishing alongside the magnificent Blackwood River whenever I felt like it. And I went a lot. It was the 90s in Australia, and incredibly safe for a 10-year-old kid to roam the landscape for miles and hours on end, all alone with nothing but a trusty pocket knife. I was able to walk through my aunt's massive property to the edge of the forest and then into the depths where the river flowed through, fishing for trout and redfin. On the last evening before I was due to go back home to the city, I was down there fishing alone as the sun was setting. I knew I'd get into trouble being out there late, but having already snared a few trout, I figured I'd be quickly forgiven, plus I was still getting bites. I remember having caught the fish and kept them in an old metal bucket. I was on my last few pieces of bait when I recall hearing a tiny pinging noise on the side of my bucket. At first I thought nothing of it because large gum nuts often fell from the trees, but then it happened again, much louder and much more forceful. I remember checking the bucket and realized they were small rocks and not gum nuts at all. I looked around assuming it was some kids from the neighboring property, which was very unlikely as it was maybe a 30-minute walk to the next property, the other side of the river, backed onto the national park where there were no other farms for miles. Plus, I hadn't come across any kids throughout my entire stay at the farm. This is where it got pretty scary. The rocks got bigger, and they started flying in from different directions, cutting my cheek and hitting me in the head. At this stage, I started crying. I was only 10 after all. and dropped my fishing rod. I had 3 large trout in the bucket, and my intention was to pick it up and run back to the farm as quick as I could. As I bent to pick it up, I was hit by another rock in the side of the head and fell over. I pulled myself up, and I stared over to the other side of the river. What I saw paralyzed my whole body with fear. It was nearly dark at this stage, but I saw the outline of 3 short-looking bodies covered in hair. I would have put them at maybe a meter tall, which is 3 to 4 feet, the size of small children, but with the bodies of men. Their faces looked like they were part of an ape or part human. It was in their eyes, though. Even though it was getting dark, their eyes had this piercing yellow glow, but were completely black in the middle. They wore no clothes, but were covered in extremely thick, clumpy hair all over their bodies, except for the knees down, and had arms that hung almost like cavemen. But here's the strangest thing. They stared at me almost without moving, like actual statues, with a curious expression on their faces, and making absolutely no noise whatsoever. It made no sense, as only a few moments before, rocks were pelting in from all directions, and yet now, they appeared frozen except for their eyes, which followed me. I managed to pull myself up and ran faster than all hell. My aunt was standing on the balcony and watched me tear through the long grass as quick as I could, with blood and cuts on my face. I told her everything, and she called the police. One officer came by to get a statement, and he said he'd visit some of the other farms around town, but he was certain there weren't any other families in the area. My aunt just assumed I couldn't see the figures properly due to the lack of light, and maybe even suffering concussion from the rocks that hit my head. She assumed they were kids or teens. I know what I saw, though, and I'll never forget those murderous-looking yellow eyes. The next morning, I went with my aunt to collect my fishing rod and bucket. My aunt was shocked to see the fishing rod and bucket still there, because she thought it was an opportunistic crime. We checked the bucket, and what we saw made our skin crawl. 3 perfect trout skeletons were floating in the bucket, not one morsel left. We don't have bears or wolves in Australia, and even the odd dingo or fox wouldn't devour an entire fish and leave its skeleton there. The whole ordeal was terrifying, but as things tend to happen when you're a kid, you just forget about it, or it lives somewhere in the back of your mind, rent-free for a while. The police officer found nothing of note, and as nothing was stolen, there was no need for further inquiry. It was the talk of the country pub for a few weeks, though. My aunt was a local, and the town had experienced odd things throughout the years, such as the sighting of tiger-like animals in the deep forest, and other strange noises reported by lumberjacks. It wasn't until I got into my 20s and became a social worker that I started working with Aboriginal communities in town. During celebratory events, I came to learn of the different Dreamtime creation stories, and eventually I had the confidence to tell an elder about what I went through. He recognized it as a bushman straight away and said I was lucky to leave that forest alive. He seemed to think that they must have believed I was an Aboriginal boy. I have a mixed racial background, and the protocol would have been for me to leave a couple of fish outside in the bucket skewered on sticks for them to come and collect after as payment for fishing in the river. But as I didn't, they reminded me, the first few pelts, and when I didn't, they eventually attacked. There aren't any Aboriginal families in that part of the Southwest to this day, which may explain why it only happened to me. The elder believed they could have taken me, though, for disobeying their sacred customs. That part wakes me up in a cold sweat in the middle of the night because I believe they could have. It's not a story I tell to my family and friends, but will confide in with the odd Aboriginal colleague or client at work, and they tell me similar things. Don't even get me started on the Australian desert. I'm 36 now, and as time goes on, I find this event something I think about more often as the years roll on, despite becoming more logical and cynical in age. I ponder its significance and proof of otherworldly beings living alongside us on this planet. Thanks for reading.
Freaky.
I know.
For a second, I forgot this was one of your Reddit stories, and I thought it was the true story.
You're like, wait, what?
Wait, what?
When he was describing them, I imagined the two little guys from Nacho Libre, the big hair, and they squeal.
Yeah. Like pigs. Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Good story.
Yeah, good story.
From down under.
All right, mate. This next one is from r/humanoid encounters. Now, I don't know about you, but I sure love hearing about things that look human but aren't.
What do you mean by that? No, take a sip.
Taking sip, crunching ice.
Yeah.
That's my half-gallon water bottle.
It's good.
What I mean by that is, I don't know, when I covered Uncanny Valley in an earlier episode, I've just kind of been obsessed with that phenomenon, because our brain has this thing, I don't remember the name of it, but anything that resembles a face, our brain fills in the gaps so that it looks more like a face to us.
Like when you look up at your ceiling?
And you see it?
At night, and you see faces and dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or like you can see faces in the clouds or faces in tree bark, you know, stuff like that. So,
okay. Yeah.
Anything that's even remotely along those lines, I find it quite fascinating. So this one was posted by Shugazi, and they say, has anyone else encountered people that didn't seem to actually be people? I was wondering if anyone else has also had any experiences with people that didn't quite seem to be people. Like there was something off about them. I had an experience some time ago, and I've never been able to shake it off. So this happened in Charleston, South Carolina, around Christmas of 2017. I used to work at a popular coffee shop that was inside of a popular big box retail store. One day around Christmas time, I had two guests that struck me as odd immediately. They were pale Caucasian women, probably mid-20s, that both looked nearly identical, but one was about a head taller. They had the exact same haircut, very straight platinum blonde bowl cuts. Their faces were quite round and their eyes were a noticeably bright hazel color and appeared quite large, but not like in a disproportionate gray alien kind of way. They both also had a fairly odd stiff gait, as though they had a board strapped to their back. They sort of shuffled with their feet around when they walked. They both also had on oversized sweaters, and I noticed later the shorter one had theirs on backwards. The weird part was their behavior. When they first walked in, the shorter one looked around the store as if they'd never been in one. Her overall demeanor was somewhat childlike. Like a good customer service rep, I welcomed them in and I told them to ask if they had any questions. The short girl looked to the taller as if for approval. She then slowly nodded her head towards me, mouth slightly agape, and then attempted a hand wave. Instead of waving at the wrist like most people, she waves with her forearm, palm flat and straight, in sort of a robotic windshield wiper-like motion. I kind of think of, like, NPCs from Skyrim.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, like, I believe that movie was called Twins, with Arnold Schwarzenegger and... oh, gosh. Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
One's taller, one shorter. Okay, uh-huh. Sorry, continue.
She then turns to the taller one, who gives her an encouraging nod. They then proceeded to walk around the cafe, looking at the cups and merchandise. The short girl would often point all around the store and seem to be asking the taller one questions, almost as if this was a guided tour. Now, obviously, I'm no linguist, but my city is a fairly popular tourist destination, and I've met foreigners from all over the globe. Even if I don't recognize a specific language, I can usually estimate roundabout where it may be from, whether it's Germanic, Slavic, Mideastern, etc. But the language they spoke to each other was very strange and not like one I've ever heard before. Imagine if you mixed Simlish with baby babble and sped it up. Lots of ga, blah, and ooh sounds. They continued on checking out the merchandise and going on what seemed to be a Q&A session. They would often open up cups and look inside, grab bags of beans and squeeze and shake them. At one point, the shorter one took apart a French press, and the taller one seemed to try to explain what it was for her. This went on for about another 10 minutes or so, when the short one picked up and picked out a studded cup to purchase. She shuffles her way over to the point of sale and puts the cup on the counter, frequently looking towards her friend as if looking for reassurance, who again does a simple nod of encouragement. She then looks towards me and attempts to smile. which was just baring her perfectly straight, white top teeth as though she were biting her bottom lip, and slowly nodding, not saying a word. It was here I noticed her sweater was on backwards, and the tag was sticking out in front of her neck. Now that I had a good look, I will say she was quite oddly attractive, but there was something about her appearance that gave me uncanny valley vibes, but I couldn't tell you exactly what was off. I will say I don't recall them ever blinking. I scanned the cup and went on the typical checkout spiel, to which there was no reply. When it was time to pay, she just pulled out a silver credit card that had no markings whatsoever. No logos, no numbers, no name. Just blank plastic with a chip. She then looks back over to the taller one and says something, who then comes over and finishes the transaction for her, showing her as though it was a teaching moment. I hand her the cup and she once again slowly nods her head, mouth ajar, and does her windshield wiper wave. They then shuffle their way out of the cafe into the rest of the store, and I never saw them again. I've told this story to people before, and they usually wave it off and say they were probably just tourists from Europe, or maybe they had a condition of sorts. But like I've said, I've encountered many foreigners, and none of them acted this much like a fish out of water, nor was their overall demeanor and behavior this uncanny. I won't rule it out as a possibility, of course, but it just doesn't quite sit satisfactory for me. It was just too weird. Does anyone else have anything similar to this?
That is, I know I say this a lot, but that is creepy. Like,
and then this user found a photo that closely resembled the girl.
Show me. I gotta see it. Oh, yeah, totally. She looks like an alien.
Yeah.
100%. Big eyes.
Kind of wide
narrow
apart.
Narrow face. Mm-hmm. Small mouth. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry to whoever's photo that is, but you look alien. Find this on our Instagram, you guys.
Look like an alien. Yes, we will post that on the gram.
So, yeah, that's my second story. If you guys want a really interesting subreddit, I suggest r/humanoid encounters, because there's a lot of stuff like this on there. And, you know, take them all with a grain of salt, but keep your mind open. I love exploring the subreddit.
Until you find a picture of yourself.
Yeah, I'm probably on there.
Like, people are taking pictures of, hey, there's some, like, two weirdos recording a podcast they think is good. Okay, cool. You ready for my story?
Hell yeah, I am.
Okay. All right. Whew. Take a second.
Brr,
brr, brr. Wayne's World. Brr, brr. Let's do the Scooby-Doo ending. Brr, brr. Okay. I guarantee you have never heard of this insane and sad story. Today's unfortunate story takes place on September 23rd, 1904, in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh yeah, I know this one.
What is it? Before I even respond to your snide, your snooty comment.
It's that really creepy one from Cincinnati, Ohio from 1904.
The story today is called, it's titled, The Cincinnati Privy Disaster. You're smirking. I can see it. It was a rainy Friday. The school children at Pleasant Ridge School were sitting at their desks, anxious to get outside and play. The bell rang, and like a roar of thunder, all of the children jumped up from their seats and booked it to the door. The teachers and the principal, Thomas L. Zimmerman, the principal, watched from their windows as the boys got ready to play a round of baseball and the girls were in their groups giggling and playing on the playground. A loud crash from the sky got Zimmerman's attention. The rain was coming down hard. On the east side of the schoolyard stood an 11-year-old outhouse, a 10-foot by 10-foot block structure containing a dozen toilets. This rickety old building had been repaired numerous times over the years and had received regular maintenance to keep it functional. A 12-foot deep room sat below the floor of the outhouse. Inside of this room sat 4 feet deep of nasty, putrid human waste. 1 year before this, the school hired a carpenter to come and install new toilet seats, update the siding, and update the flooring. This carpenter 100% believed the old floor was solid enough, so he built a new floor on top of it, calling it good. One problem, though, he never checked the joists. Okay, now back to the events of September 23rd. Suddenly, a huge gust of wind sent most of the kids back inside of the schoolhouse. Some of the boys kept their baseball game going. They weren't scared of a little rain and wind. But roughly 29 to 30 girls decided to find shelter in the closest building they could see, the outhouse. One after the other, the girls were pushing and shoving their way into the square structure. Some girls even thought, hey, there are way too many people in here. But before they had a chance to turn around, the crowd had already pushed them deeper inside. Thinking this was such a weird moment in time, some of the younger girls were dancing and jumping and enjoying the crazy rain that was falling down right outside. Suddenly, the floor the girls were standing on completely collapsed. The joists that the carpenter failed to check had grown weak from years of moisture. Before the girls knew it, they were free-falling 8 feet into the pit of waste. Ellie Ferguson, 16 at the time of the incident, recounted the following. There was no crash at all. There was no noise whatsoever. The floor just fell. That's all there was to it. Not a child scream that I heard. I felt the floor going and jumped quickly, clutching to the side of the door. I was left hanging to it, and with all my strength, I pulled myself up and out of that place. The toilets themselves stayed firm to the walls. 5 of the girls were able to hold on and pull themselves up and sit on them until help arrived. And so to kind of explain, the seats were connected to the wall and not the floor. Down below was a scene out of a horror movie. Screams and cries were filling the outhouse. The girls that fell were scratching and clawing as they tried to find a way to the top, but they were stuck. The youngest of the girls was only 7 years old, so I can't even imagine them trying to swim in the 4 feet of filth while trying to catch their breath. Girls were pushing and shoving, trying to climb onto other shoulders and stretch out their hands to those above them still sitting on the toilets. It was a free-for-all. You can probably imagine, but the younger, weaker girls were crushed and shoved down as the older and stronger girls fought for their lives. And it's not just the girls that fell, it was also the flooring. One of the students, Lorena Ferguson, was about to enter the outhouse when the floor gave way. Acting quickly, she grabbed the back of her friend's dress and yanked her back, preventing her from falling in. Without skipping a beat, the two girls rushed to the school to get help. Zimmerman, the principal, was inside the school chatting with the teacher when those two girl students burst through the school door screaming for help. Help, help, somebody, please, come quick, they yelled. Zimmerman looked at the girls, and once he understood what they were hollering about, he rushed outside to witness the most ghastly scene he had ever encountered. It is reported that the sight was too much for him, and he almost fainted. One of the other girls ran straight to the high school classroom and alerted the teacher and students. The teacher and 4 of the older high school boys ran outside to the outhouse. Like Zimmerman, they too could not believe what they were seeing. Once Zimmerman regained his composure, he shouted for the boys to grab ropes, ladders, or anything else they could find to help. William Schultz, 20, and John Carell, 18, and a few other men from town were across the street at their church when they could hear the girls crying out for help. Without hesitation, they ran over to assist in any way they could. Zimmerman was doing his best to pull the girls out one by one. The narrow door and small light made it hard for them to see inside. Looking over his shoulder, the men saw the grisly sight. And remember, this is like before flashlights too. So it's deep. There's no sunlight. So I can't even imagine like what the heck he's thinking.
Oh yeah. You're just hearing screams.
Mm-hmm.
And it smells terrible.
Smells so bad. Yeah. Finally, the ladders and rope arrived, but the ladders were too short, and the rope was not the strongest. Zimmerman was already being held by his ankles as he was lowered down to try and grab as many girls as he could. The men pulled him back up and tried to use the ropes. They lowered it down to one of the older girls, and she wrapped it around her wrist. She yells, "Pull me up!" Right when she was about to reach the top, the rope snapped, and she fell back down into the pit of filth. At this point, the men were trying everything they could to reach down and pull them out. Zimmerman was shocked by the way the girls were still climbing on top of each other, trying to be the first to get out. A second rope taken from the bell tower. Like, apparently there's no rope anywhere. It was brought to the scene. Like the first one, it was too weak and it broke.
The bell tower rope was too weak?
I guess, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, it makes sense. It probably was super weak over time.
Oh, true. It was probably old.
Mm-hmm. A longer ladder was found in a barn and brought to the scene. It wasn't long enough to reach the entire length, but it was just enough for Zimmerman and some of the other town men to climb down and help the girls up one at a time. At this point, the girls were drowning, being trampled over, passing out from the fumes and the heat that was trapped down there with them. Hazel, and I apologize if I butcher this, Hazel Sanur recounts the moments of being trapped. She could barely reach a stone that would give her some ability to pull herself up, but every time she was about to finally get a good hold on it, the girls below would pull at her like they were trying to save themselves, like climbing on top of her. She also recounts that at some point she felt something below her feet, something that gave her a little more height to reach the stone that was sticking out of the wall. She believes it was the corpse of one of the girls that drowned. Like an angel from heaven, Zimmerman grabbed her arm and pulled her up to safety. Finally, Zimmerman and the townsmen had pulled up the last girl that had fallen in. The fumes and exhaustion they got to him. He would have passed out if it weren't for his fellow rescuers there to assist him. The screams and begging for help had all ceased. It was quiet. While Zimmerman laid back, trying to catch his breath and breathe fresh air, it didn't dawn on him that not all of the girls made it out alive. Someone had to go down there and check for the bodies, something that didn't even cross their minds, but unfortunately had to be done. The two young men I mentioned earlier, William Schultz and John Carell, along with Reverend Lambert, all volunteered to go down and search for the missing girls. They were given rakes to help wade through the thick muck. And just as a reminder, this is 4 feet deep of feces, you know, yeah. The girls were quickly taken inside the school and to nearby homes to be cleaned up and cared for. Word spread rapidly, and worried parents stormed the school premises, frantically checking each girl to see if she was their own, concerned that their daughter might still be trapped. Each girl was covered head to toe in human filth, making them nearly unrecognizable due to the thick layers of muck. 19 girls survived, 9 lost their lives. The city morgue was no way capable of hosting that many bodies, so the high school became a temporary morgue. Dr. Sanur, the father of one of the girls that I mentioned earlier, Hazel, was quick to arrive and assess the situation. When the last body had been removed and placed in the high school, he examined all of them, trying his absolute best to try and revive what was left in them, but unfortunately, all 9 were already dead. Sanur relieved Zimmerman and stayed the rest of the afternoon to oversee the situation. Zimmerman was exhausted, distraught, felt ill, and guilty. When Coroner Weaver arrived on the scene, he examined the bodies and then the outhouse. All he said was, and I quote, "Rotten, rotten, rotten. Everything was rotten. Those joists would not hold anything." Pieces of the floor were hoisted up. Weaver was able to easily puncture the wood with his finger. That's how rotten the floor had become. The local churches held back-to-back funerals to accompany the 9 girls who had passed. The entire town was distraught. The school closed down to repair the damages and reopened a month later. Word of the accident had spread to everyone in the state. Curious visitors stuck their heads through the boarded-up entrance and tossed bits of like newspaper they lit on fire to just down into the vault to see how truly deep it really was. A snippet from the newspaper, the Worthington Advance, lists the 9 girls as follows. It says, "The victims. The dead are Loretta Fink, age 12, daughter of Henry Fink of the Sroth Packing Company, Cincinnati. Emma Steinkamp, age 13, daughter of John Steinkamp. Amelia Hess, age 9, daughter of Herman D. Hess, dairyman. Martha Burr, aged 8, father dead, mother Ella Burr. Edna Thee, age 10, daughter of John Thee, blacksmith. Lillian Witham, age 13, daughter of W.A. Witham, farmer. Hazel Glover, aged 8, parents dead, lives with grandmother, Mrs. Wolf." That one's really sad. Like,
yeah, end of the line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, grandmother lost her daughter and son-in-law, and now her granddaughter. Yeah. Fosta Card, aged 11, and Chairman Card, aged 9, both daughters of William Card, the firm of McCullough and Sons, Cincinnati. So I just want you to think about it for a second. Just kind of process everything we just talked about. The girls and the men that helped rescue the girls that made it out, they actually got infections from breathing in all of that filth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, how many people had lasting effects from that?
I'm not sure about lasting effects. I didn't see anything about that.
Well, lasting as in sick.
Yeah. So actually says, so Will Schultz, one of the younger men that, you know, went straight down there, the one that was from across the street, he had severe pain in his lungs from inhaling all the fumes. So that messed with him for a good minute. But he survived. He was fine. But of course, the girls that survived, yeah, they definitely had some issues. Like, they were covered in head to toe, thick layers of this muck. So, of course, I'm sure they swallowed some. They were definitely breathing it all in.
In their eyes.
I'm sure they, like, had to probably wipe their face with their hands. And by doing so, you know, they wiped in their eyes. Yeah, in their mouth. Probably got in their ears.
There's not enough showers.
No.
To take that away. Ugh. Yeah.
So the Cincinnati Privy disaster of 1904 stands as a haunting reminder of the delicate balance between safety and tragedy. The loss of 9 young girls in what should have been an ordinary day highlights how quickly life can change when safety is compromised. This heartbreaking event not only left an indelible mark on the community, but also serves as a powerful call to action, urging us to learn from the past to prevent future tragedies. The memory of these young lives continue to resonate, reminding us to value and protect the well-being of every individual.
Jeez, okay, yeah, I had never heard that story before. I don't know how. That seems like it would turn into some urban legend at some point.
Well, I was scouring Reddit to find stories that actually this worked great because I was looking for stories that no one has heard of because I've told stories that, you know, are quite popular.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Yeah, and then sure enough, this one was, I hadn't heard of it. And then I found it on Reddit, and even the comments were like, how have I never heard of this?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just insane. And for those wondering, there was definitely some blame put on people about the flooring, but they could never officially, if I'm not mistaken, they could not officially like put the blame on someone. They couldn't sue anyone, and so no one was charged with anything.
Okay.
Yeah. And there you go. That's the story.
Wow, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. And I know that's not like spooky, and I apologize, you're not scared, but it is still like a very strange thing to happen, especially to 9 girls. Well, I guess 30.
Well, yeah. Well, I'm actually going to think about that now when I go to the bathroom. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Just don't fall through.
I don't plan on it, but... that reminded me of a place we went to go eat in Texas, and the bathroom is in this big warehouse, and the whole thing was decorated, like the whole ceiling, with toilet seats, and they're all like artistically painted, and there's probably 1,000 toilet seats in this warehouse.
Okay.
And yeah, when you're talking about how many toilets were in there, I was just like,
collapsed.
Sounds like where I went to in Texas.
Yeah.
But
I have some pictures if you'd like to see them.
Yeah.
So let me just turn my computer around right here. And for those listening, we will these will either be on the YouTube video associated with this audio, and you'll also see them. Well, you'll see them both the YouTube video and the Instagram. So this is a picture of Hazel Glover, one of the girls. Just a cute little girl, and her looks like in her school dress best.
Yeah, she looks great. Yeah. I love her hat.
Yeah. This is William Schultz, the guy who was super brave and jumped right into action.
Yeah.
Solid guy. Here's a newspaper article showing, so this is the structure right here. This is the, I thought that was the principal. So that's actually the Dr. Sunur. There's the school. I have a better picture of the school, actually. Picture of the school.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cool, old building. Very, very cool. Here is a artist's sketch of the events, and it is hectic. You can see the building. You can see them trying to like revive one of the girls, and you can see kind of
the sludge
and the muck around her. Just
I mean, that's like an anxiety inducing drawing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there is a real picture scene outside of the outhouse.
Wow. I was gonna say, do you have any photos? But you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't have any.
Yeah, that was the hard part. But I was able to find these. It was an easy Google search, and I found it. There aren't a ton of photos, but they do have enough to give you a good general story, or paint a picture, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very sad. Once again, not very spooky, but very, very weird.
Jeez, that's a crazy story. Well, thank you for finding that. I'm not going to forget that.
Yeah. Well,
wow.
We shouldn't. I believe that there is like a marble. They erected like a marble structure for like in remembrance of the nine girls in that, at least in that town. It could be at the schoolyard. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah, very sad. Okay, do you have anything else before we end this episode?
No, that's it for me. Everyone think twice about your bathroom floor next time you go. I know I will.
Well, you live in a basement, so you'll be fine.
You don't know that.
Okay. All right, guys. We will scare you in the next one.
Stay spooky. Bye. ASMR.
What is that?
My Yeti water bottle.
Yeti water bottle ASMR. Okay.
Ain't no Stanley.
Mm-hmm. We ain't no typical blonde-haired Mormon wife in this.
Cut that out. Mom listens to this.
Okay, Jesse, cut that out.